Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you in part by Oaktree Medical Center and Vala Security. Hello, and welcome to Vital Voices. I'm Alexis Burrows, and today we're tackling an often overlooked topic, men's hormonal health across the lifespan. Hormonal imbalances aren't just a women's issue. They impact men too, affecting energy, mood, reproductive health, and aging. We're thrilled to welcome back endocrinologist Dr. Cameron Cartwright, trusted voice in hormonal health, to guide us through key topics like low testosterone, andropause, and hormone replacement therapy. This episode is for every man and for the people who care about them. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We are going to jump right in. In last week's conversation, we talked about how hormones play a role in the physical and mental development of women. So similarly, what influence do hormones have in men's development across their lifespan?
Excellent. So I'm happy that we did split this into two different talks because it is such an expansive topic for both men and women to give them the appropriate dedicated time. So that we can, as you said, for those that may be a concern for themselves or for the people who love them, because I do find a lot of times for men, it's their female counterparts or family members that will urge them to be seen. As we talked about briefly in the other discussion, obviously in the overall lifespan of patients, men and women, there are so many hormones beyond sex hormones that play a role in how our body is orchestrated and how it functions in all of these intricate processes. But specifically from a male hormone standpoint, the major male hormone is testosterone. Mm-hmm. In men, it allows for development of secondary sexual characteristics. So that would be, testicular development, penile development, muscle mass gain, full facial beards, if that's what men want to have, right? Mm-hmm. And it also is important in allowing men to achieve, their maximum bone density and their maximum bone health. Again, as we go through puberty, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And it supports their libido and their ability to procreate.
Huh.
Yep.
So what are the major hormonal changes men experience over their lifetime? We know with women, you have puberty, you have menopause. What is it for men?
So for men, it's puberty as well. Typical age for puberty for men is age 9 to 13. Mm-hmm. It usually starts...
Ages is so early, man. You mentioned 8 when we did the women's one. Mm-hmm. 8 and 9 just seems so incredibly young.
It does. There's actually... And then we talk about what would be considered precocious puberty. Precocious puberty is when an individual, boy or girl, is going through pubertal changes 2 standard deviations younger than what is typical. You'll have some patients that'll start at age 6, and that's considered precocious puberty. This should not be happening that soon. But then we have to look at ethnicity, body mass. Again, we talked about for girls, heavier set girls are more likely to go through it sooner in terms of puberty. Not as much data linked for boys, though. You're right. It does seem crazy in terms of thinking of that as a starting age, right? Especially when you look at your own kids. You're like,
yeah.
But exactly, like, oh gosh, that's around the corner before you blink. So for boys, it's usually first scrotal growth, then penile enlargement, and then body hair development. Right. Voice deepening. They'll also have, during puberty, gain about 20% of what's going to be their adult height. So they have a major linear growth in terms of you see them shooting up. Exactly. They'll also gain muscle mass. So we talked about with girls, it's more often fat mass that's accrued, but for boys, it's more often lean muscle mass. And as we age, so let's say we've already, men, beg your pardon, I can't say we because I'm not a dude. As men age, then it also plays a role in libido, spontaneous morning erections, things of that nature. Red blood cell production in terms of your blood count is importantly driven by testosterone as well. And then sperm production, again, coming back to what is our overall goal as humans in terms of procreation.
Right. So what are some of the major hormonal changes that men experience over their lifetime?
So it would be, again, the testosterone. So men are different in that throughout men's lifespan, if they have adequate testosterone production, which is the major male hormone, they will have sperm production. Right. And that's why you will see some older men still fathering children, because every several months they get a new batch of sperm that's being created. there is not as stark of a decrease in male hormone production compared to what we see in menopause in women,
okay.
where women have this kind of like drop off of a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
When I say drop off of a cliff, yes, we talked about several years before menopause, things are already starting to change and then mm-hmm. boom, it's down. With men, it's more of a gradual decrease in that on average, you know, there's some data suggests as early as 30 that it starts to decline. Other data talks about 40, 45, the testosterone levels mm-hmm. can start to decline about 1-2% per year for men.
Oh, wow.
But you know, there can also be so many other multitudes of reasons that men can go into a low testosterone state.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about it in big detail with women because menopause is what's expected to happen.
Right.
But if, let's say, when we were talking about women and we talked about premature ovarian failure, for those who go through that before 40, then we have to say what else could have caused it,
because
mm-hmm. that's not a natural expectation.
Right.
Whereas for men, every time we have a suspicion of low testosterone and we want to investigate it, we have to find out where the issue lies.
Mm-hmm.
Because can it decrease as men age? Yes, but it's not usually to a level of complete deficiency,
mm-hmm.
Unless there might be something else underlying it.
Right.
Yeah.
So speaking of that deficiency, I know, you know, there are tons of commercials, things like low T and all these things that people talk about, because, you know, there's always a medication for everything you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, you know, the low testosterone, for obvious reasons, is a big conversation, or at least a big fear, a big topic for men.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess moving into that direction, like, what are some signs and symptoms of low testosterone in men?
So I would say the biggest ones that will prompt a patient to be seen, sex drive going down, so mm-hmm. libido being affected, erectile dysfunction. Sometimes it can also be fatigue, changes in mood. They notice that they're not having as much endurance when they go to like weightlift and things of that nature, maybe seeing if their muscle mass is decreasing even mm-hmm. though they're still keeping up in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Changes in breast size, because men do have a small amount of breast tissue that exists right behind the nipple,
mm-hmm.
and it can come up during puberty and then it goes away. And then mm-hmm. later in life, as testosterone levels start to come down, you'll see it again. So when low testosterone is happening, that can sometimes be a presentation people will see. There can also be the same way estrogen in women protects bone health. Testosterone mm-hmm. can also protect bone health indirectly through estrogen as well. Because
mm-hmm.
again, remember, both men and women, we have both.
Right.
So estrogen will also still protect bones in men. And you can find patients that are having unexpected osteoporosis. Brittle bones, where they're breaking bones easily, is another possibility. And then some other symptoms that are not as, you know, specific,
mm-hmm.
that they could be caused by other things. Decreased sleep in terms of insomnia. You can have issues where patients are having poor concentration and memory, and then mood disturbances again, and even hot flashes. Although I rarely see that. I haven't seen many men come and tell me then, hey, doc, I'm breaking out into a sweat. Usually the reason they will sit down and wonder is erectile dysfunction.
Right.
That's the biggest one that'll come about in a conversation.
Mm-hmm. I know we talked about in the first episode, how those hormonal changes can affect. So for men, how would low testosterone affect their overall physical health, energy levels, mental well-being?
So I would say, you know, again, because I think of the fact that it's going to affect muscle mass, which can affect appearance,
mm-hmm.
Breast development affecting appearance, low libido, which, you know, depending on the gentleman that you speak with, I think that's a very large part of what men see as important in their life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that women don't also see that as important, but it can really have an effect on their psyche because of the fact of how things are changing.
Right.
And otherwise, apart from those physical changes, it's not that it puts them at direct risk for cardiovascular disease, as we were talking about with estrogen deficiency in women,
mm-hmm.
but it could put them at risk for the brittle bones in terms of mm-hmm. sooner onset of osteoporosis.
Right.
So the same way we talk about doing bone density scans in women, men should also be considered for them around age 70,
mm-hmm.
unless they have another reason to have a concern. And again, right. we could always do this as a full discussion about osteoporosis. But, you know, I think those are the biggest things in terms of the symptoms and of what patients can experience. But some aspects in terms of the low energy, the sleep disturbances, even going back to women as well, there can be other reasons. Mm-hmm. So depending on where it's happening in a patient's lifespan, then we have to say, okay, is there something else in the background?
Right.
Are you having increased stress levels related to like psychosocial factors? Is something going on in your family life and your work life? Are there any medications that could be leading to it? Because when we look at low testosterone specifically, again, because it's not as big of a drop-off compared to what we see with women, we do every time need to investigate why. Is it something that happened at the testicular level? So sometimes infections in the testes, sometimes if you have an injury to the testicle, if someone has a like a hydrocele or a varicocele where you can have a large collection of fluid in the scrotal sac, not in the testes itself, but in the sac around it, and that pushes on the testes, that can cause an issue. Certain chemotherapies can hurt the testes. So that's why a lot of patients that have to go through chemotherapy, depending on the type and depending on the cancer being treated, they'll have discussions about preserving their fertility before going through those treatments. You have to think about tumors. So again, these are all at the level of the testes.
Right.
And then apart from that, that would be called primary hypogonadism, primary low T coming from an issue in the testes. Then you can have other causes in terms of central or secondary that can come from the big boss pituitary gland. So again, patients who may have excess iron stores in their body, major diseases like hemochromatosis, people who have tumors there. People who may be on chronic opioids, pain medications can actually block testosterone production as well. So, you know, we have to come to the realization of, okay, if someone has suggestion of low T, first we have to confirm, is it actually low T?
Right.
And then we have to investigate what's causing it.
You got to find the root cause. Yeah, because it's something, you know, like, again, we've had a lot of different conversations in this space. And one of the things that I remember someone mentioning was like, you know, a lot of times, maybe, I don't know if that's too strong a phrase, but often you have low testosterone as a symptom of something else that's going on.
Correct.
Whether that be, or like you said, a side effect. So I know, I think you mentioned it when we had the diabetes conversation, that some of the diabetic meds impact like libido and your testosterone level and things like that as well. So there's all of those things that come into play, and that's why it's the core things you have to actually find out. Is it that, and then what may be causing it?
Right. And one large one that I actually should mention is for men, there's a big misconception that blood pressure medications will lead to erectile dysfunction. There are some older school blood pressure medications that are especially used in patients with abnormal heart rhythms, history of like heart attack or heart disease that will have a high risk for erectile dysfunction. But I like to remind men that uncontrolled blood pressure in and of itself can lead to erectile dysfunction in that it can destroy the blood vessels that supply the penis.
Right.
Same way uncontrolled diabetes can do the same. So that just again goes back to other causes. And then sleep apnea, I should have said that one, I apologize, is a huge one to think about. In that if you have a patient who has high blood pressure, their family members tell them they snore, they know that they wake up coughing, spluttering out of their sleep, or their partner said, hey, I saw you start breathing in your sleep and I had to tap you last night to get you to start breathing again, and you have low testosterone, fixing the sleep apnea will fix the testosterone. So if we can find an underlying cause that we can fix as opposed to just a band-aid of giving the hormone replacement, that's what we want to do for sure.
Okay. So I guess that kind of partly answers the next question, you know, because depending, I imagine, on what's causing the low testosterone, you know, the treatment options then vary widely. But what are some of the treatment options available for men with low testosterone?
So again, once we find the cause, we confirm that it is in fact low. Then we have to, just as I talk about it all the time, I'm sorry to sound like a stuck record, you have to ask the patient, what is their goal? So let's say that this is a young gentleman who has low testosterone but wants to have kids, I can't give him testosterone. Because testosterone, again, is going to shut down the normal access between the big boss pituitary gland and the brain and the testes. And they're just going to take a backseat and say, hey, it's coming from the outside. Why do I have to do any of the work? And sperm will not be produced. Whereas if a gentleman is young, has been found to have low testosterone, it's something that, let's say, is persistent or genetic disorder, for instance. Because you can have patients who from the outside are fully appearing as a gentleman, have a penis and testes, but do not have full expression of their testosterone, they're not going to create sperm. So then there's a different way that we have to manage those patients. And we also will use the same medication we talked about for women in PCOS, Clomid, mm-hmm. which again mimics the signal that comes from the Biggs Boss pituitary gland. We can use that to try and push their testes mm-hmm. to actually make the testosterone from its own body
right.
and then allow them to make sperm.
Right.
So let's say that that's not the case. Let's mm-hmm. say that that's, it's an older gentleman or even not an older gentleman, just someone found to have low T. And they want treatment, but they're not worried about conception, mm-hmm. Then we would do testosterone replacement. Currently in the United States, it comes in gel. It also comes in pellets, which I never really used. And it's not a big thing that we as endocrinologists use, to be truthful with you, but it might be something, you know, have discussions with urologists. Mm-hmm. And then the other is injections. Currently here at home in country, the majority of what you're going to find is injections. Okay. Testosterone is a controlled substance because people can abuse it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big portion of what's going to limit what availability we can get in country mm-hmm. because the FDA and drug enforcement in the States is going to have a strict control on that. Because even when I worked in the States and we would, you know, prescribe testosterone, we then had to do like two-factor authentication to say, yes, we are actually a physician prescribing this, not someone trying to just get it.
Right.
Because if someone is using testosterone when they don't need it, mm-hmm. you know, people who may want to use it for bodybuilding, for instance, mm-hmm. again, you're going to shut down your own testicles because it's coming from the outside. So your right. sperm count's going to go down. Mm-hmm. Testes are going to shrink. Roid rage, they talk about.
Right.
But that's, again, when it's being used incorrectly.
Right. That's that space where, mm-hmm. I guess, like you said, bodybuilders and sometimes athletes trying to get around the rules and get better performance in that space.
In that space, exactly. Right. But if it's someone who's truly low and needing the replacement, mm-hmm. then we talk about, okay, again, what are the goals of the replacement? And mm-hmm. we follow the levels to make sure that we're not overshooting those goals so that right. we don't cause those possible side effects, right. one. And other side effects. So apart from those, if in used, when used the proper way, the risks are there in terms of things that can happen, blood clots, heart attack and stroke and things of that nature that we have to be very careful with.
Right. So, you know, similarly, we talked about menopause in our initial conversation, you know, so let's talk about andropause, which as far as I understand is the male version of menopause. But what is it and how does it compare to menopause in women?
Excellent question. So to be truthful with you, it is not a term that I have used often.
Fair.
But I'm open to it because, you know, there is data again suggesting that men from as early as 30, some resources, other resources, 40, 45, mm-hmm. that there will start to be a decline in testosterone production. Mm-hmm. But it's about 1-2% reduction in testosterone production.
Right.
It's not, again, this sudden drop off of a cliff after several preceding years of building up to knowing that that's probably coming in comparison mm-hmm. to menopause. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that that's not still a significant concern for gentlemen in right. terms of the symptoms that they could be having and the changes that they will see in their life. So I would say it is not as prevalent okay. as menopause, but it's still a really important thing to have a discussion with your doctor if you're having any of those symptoms that we talked about mm-hmm. that could be the possibility for low T.
Okay. At what age do men typically experience the hormonal decline in the instances that they do, and then what are some of the symptoms?
So I would say probably, again, I would probably more reliably believe the resource is talking about 40s in okay. terms of getting closer to even 50s, 60s to right. really be to seeing that change.
30 sounds kind of young.
It does. It's not to say that it may not start happening. And again, if you look at other comorbidities, obesity itself, uncontrolled mm-hmm. diabetes itself can affect
right.
the protein.
These are the risk factors.
Exactly. The protein that shuttles testosterone around, mm-hmm. it affects that and therein affects the efficacy and how well testosterone will work in the body. Mm. So those are things that we have to control to also lessen the likelihood that, okay, maybe your body's actually making enough testosterone, right. but it can't work as well as it's supposed to.
Right. Maybe it's not an issue of not having enough. Maybe right. it's an issue of it being effective.
Correct.
Or like you correct. Said, even being able to get around where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. Okay. So again, the major symptoms, biggest ones patients will talk about, decreased sex drive, decreased libido, erectile mm-hmm. dysfunction, loss of muscle mass, fatigue, breast tissue development. And then it's definitely something, let's say if they're not necessarily having those symptoms, but they come in with osteoporosis and I don't have another reason mm-hmm. to suspect why they might have broken a bone inappropriately, because with osteoporosis, patients are at the higher risk of breaking bones from just a ground level fall. Mm-hmm. Like they slipped and boom, their hip is broken.
Right.
We need to find out why. So mm-hmm. that would be another reason that would spark me to check a testosterone level.
Yeah, I guess especially in younger ages.
Mm-hmm.
Right. How can men manage the effects of aging on their hormonal health?
So as you alluded to in the other podcast is lifestyle. It comes back to a lot of lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. In that there is suggestions that controlling comorbidities that can worsen erectile dysfunction in general. Mm-hmm. Because again, we could suspect that if someone's having that issue, that it could be low T, but it could also be uncontrolled pressure, uncontrolled sleep apnea, obesity, mm-hmm. uncontrolled diabetes. So I would say, truthfully, if you're having a low T, that is not a consequence of an organic disease. What I mean to say, a problem at the pituitary level, mm-hmm. a medication side effect that's been put upon you, to be mm-hmm. truthful, or a testicular level event or injury, mm-hmm. then apart from controlling comorbidities in the background, there isn't actually a lot that you can do to really change the course and the trajectory of the low testosterone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of it would go back to if there is some pre-existing issue, trying to manage that and then potentially getting the benefit of the testosterone going up as a result.
Okay. Exactly.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back. Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
So going back to the conversation around hormone replacement therapy, as it pertains to men, you know, who is it actually suitable for?
Excellent question. So I would say any patient that has symptoms that could fit, again, high index of suspicion before we test.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually want two confirmatory levels. The reason I say that is male hormone levels, female hormone levels too, will fluctuate depending on the time of day, mm-hmm. depending on food intake. Mm-hmm. For us as women, depending on where we are in our cycle. Mm-hmm. So if let's say I have a patient who came to me as a referral for low testosterone, but mm-hmm. their testosterone was checked 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I can't really use that to solidify that they have a low T, because that's not the right time of day to check it. Mm. Because it has a diurnal variation. Highest when you're getting up in the morning. As mm-hmm. the day goes on, it goes down, and then it comes back up, and so on.
Right.
So the last thing I would want to do would be to classify you as, you know, a patient with low T, subject you to the replacement,
right.
which again, right now in country is only injections. So that's one thing to overcome first, if people are comfortable with injections, right?
People scared of needles.
Yeah, but also to not expose you to something you don't really need.
Right.
So that's the first thing. And then once we have that confirmation, then the hormone replacement therapy would be to give you testosterone. Okay. Again, if you're not trying to achieve conception.
Right.
And then we have to do monitoring in terms of ensuring that it's safe to continue using the hormone replacement therapy. When we use it, we have to ensure certain instances of when would it not be safe to use it. So yes, those are the people who are suitable for it. Symptoms, confirmation on two separate blood works, and no reason to not give it to them in terms of contraindications.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. What are some of the risks and benefits of hormone replacement therapy for men?
Okay. So we could start with the risks, because we anticipate the benefit would be in terms of improving their quality of life, right? Improving mm-hmm. their libido, sex drive, erectile function. Mm-hmm. Again, not sperm production if we're doing testosterone.
Right.
But the risks would be, we talked about in the beginning that one of the things that testosterone does naturally in your body is helps to produce red blood cells. Mm-hmm. If you are getting too much testosterone, that can cause your red blood cells to increase in number. Mm-hmm. It can thicken your blood and put you at risk for blood clots.
Right.
So we have to be very careful with blood clots. We have to be very careful with patients who have a history of heart disease. Specifically, anyone who's had an MI or stroke in the last 6 months, mm-hmm. that might be a reason that we won't give it to them right then. We would also say other risks would be if you have already prostate possible symptoms mm-hmm. in terms of lower urinary tract symptoms, where they might have increased urination at night, trouble starting the stream, dribbling, things of that nature, we can make it worse with testosterone, because testosterone in men who already have prostate enlargement, mm-hmm. testosterone can make the prostate grow. People who may have prostate cancer actively, definitely not, because we can make it worse. Mm-hmm. People who may have a strong family history of Afro-Caribbean descent, you mm-hmm. also have to put that into perspective and say, are you willing to take the risk? And uncontrolled obstructive sleep apnea, because mm-hmm. again, we can fix that
right.
rather than going ahead and giving you a testosterone replacement. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's another one that seems to have a lot of, I guess, a lot of things that come out of it. If you have sleep apnea, it's usually, I imagine, because of things like obesity and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So then yep. you have the risk of diabetes, hypertension, low T, all these different things.
Right.
Come out of that OSA space. So it's another one of those things where I think, you know, we're looking to actually have a conversation about sleep issues, sleep disturbances as well. Because I think there's a lot to unpack in that arena and how it affects your overall health.
Most definitely, obstructive sleep apnea. And I think for some patients, you know, if they don't recognize the snoring, if they don't necessarily have symptoms, because to touch on it for just a second, obstructive sleep apnea, people will often have like daytime fatigue. Mm-hmm. Like they could easily fall asleep at a traffic light, or, yeah. you know, if it's quiet, they can have daytime headaches. But there are so many underlying things that can happen. Uncontrolled blood pressure, low male hormone, risk for abnormal heart mm-hmm. rhythms. And it's something that could be managed with, for some patients, sinus surgery. Beg your pardon, depending on where the issue lies.
Right.
Other patients, CPAP or BiPAP machines that they wear at night. Mm-hmm. And for some patients, also weight loss can yeah. really make a big difference in it too. Coming back to weight loss, right?
Right. So yeah, like I said, that's an important conversation that we need to have as well. And we're looking to have that in the upcoming weeks and months.
Awesome.
All right. So we talked about HRT, but are there any natural ways to boost testosterone?
So there again could be You know, there's some suggestions in terms of, again, healthy lifestyle, mm-hmm. in terms of stress management, adequate sleep, exercise, mm-hmm. Both cardiac, like cardiovascular exercise, but more so weight training. Mm-hmm. Although most of the data with that is talking about boosting your testosterone right around the time that you're actually doing the weight training.
Right. But it's not an extended benefit.
Correct. But then you could say, regardless, you're achieving muscle mass. You are going to also, by putting weight on your bones, sustain bone health that mm-hmm. helps to reduce osteoporosis and so on. Avoiding uncontrolled diabetes, right? Maintaining mm-hmm. a healthy weight, because again, both diabetes and obesity affects that protein called sex hormone binding globulin. It helps to take testosterone around and allows it to actually work. Mm-hmm. So if those two entities are there and they're not controlled, you could again have enough testosterone, mm-hmm. but it can't be released to the tissues to work the way that it's supposed to.
Right.
And then I think a big one otherwise would be avoiding excess alcohol, which is really important for our community mm-hmm. in terms of what we as Bahamians might consider as acceptable versus excess alcohol intake. When I have conversations with patients, they're like, I don't know what you're talking about there, doc.
I always mention my wife is a physician, and I remember at one point when she was doing, I think, residency or med school, and they were going through what the typical serving size is,
right?
For the different types of alcohol. And I was just like, oh, we are a different breed of human.
In this region. Because, most definitely. Caribbeans in general.
What they consider to be an acceptable amount or a normal amount, and where excess comes in, I'm like, yeah, but our people live in excess if that's the case.
For sure.
Because those numbers are quite, quite low.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's another story for another day. So let's talk a little bit about men's reproductive health. So obviously we know that one of the risks of doing HRT is an impact on sperm development, sperm count, and therefore fertility. But just in the natural order of, if you have a hormone imbalance as a man, how does that impact fertility?
So if it's low T, then that will affect fertility.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think about any other hormones, especially thyroid dysfunction, to a limited extent, mm-hmm. Prolactin, which is a hormone that largely affects us as women, but it comes from the big pituitary gland in the brain that tells our body as women to breastfeed mm-hmm. and allow us to have milk production. But if it's having an abnormal expression in men, can also lead to issues with hypogonadism and ineffective testosterone development, ineffective sperm development.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an important concept that when you have a couple that is dealing with infertility, that both members have to be assessed. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think a lot of times, which it might also be a biased conversation, right? A lot of times women will have more of that conversation with me as opposed to men.
Mm-hmm.
And women will say, well, you know, I'm going down the road of doing my investigations. It doesn't mean that both partners can't have investigations done at the same time. And thankfully for men, it's usually just, you know, a sperm donation. So we can actually look to see, or semen donation, beg your pardon, see, is there effective sperm in terms of the count? How are they swimming? Do they look mature and so on, so that we can have an idea. But low T would be the biggest that would affect men's ability to have adequate sperm production and thus their fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you've covered the testosterone part of this, but are there other hormones that, you know, play a part in conditions like erectile dysfunction outside of testosterone? Like if you have other hormonal issues, can that affect it?
If you had severe hypothyroidism, underactive thyroid,
mm-hmm.
that could then affect your prolactin level. That could then, again, affect your testosterone level. Then it would come back to that. So it still comes down to T, at least from a hormonal standpoint.
Right.
But I think the big thing that also is important for men to realize when they are troubled with erectile dysfunction, which I can appreciate is a very, you know, troubling condition,
mm-hmm.
especially because that's a very important part of anyone's life, is that it can be in conjunction with other things. Mm-hmm. In that if we're having someone that smokes, someone who has uncontrolled cholesterol, someone who already has cardiovascular disease, that they've had a bypass in their heart, the same way you can have larger blood vessels affected, smaller blood vessels could be affected. And those are the things that allow the penis to do what it needs to do for erection. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that even sometimes if we have a patient with low T, we fix the T in terms of improving it to a mid-normal range, and they're still having erectile dysfunction, they may need to have help with urology to say, is there anything else that could be done to help them? Mm-hmm. But it still comes down to testosterone when we think about from a hormonal standpoint.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about this a little bit on the women's side of this conversation, but you know, what impact does low testosterone or other hormonal imbalances in men have on men's mental health, like in terms of especially playing into conditions like anxiety and depression? Because I know we covered that in the women's conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, how does that work on the man's side of the equation?
Understood. So, I mean, again, they see, at least from the men's standpoint, they're thinking that it's more of a non-specific symptom when they might see mood disturbances as compared to the propensity of it happening in women who go through menopause. Mm-hmm. But I think it's still an important thing, you know, to appreciate, because again, if this is something that you're used to working normally, mm-hmm. and now it's not, and it's affecting you as a person, affecting you with your partner, that depression can definitely come about. But you know, overall, when you read guidelines, it's more considered a non-specific presentation or clinical manifestation. I actually think it's a consequence, mm-hmm. in terms of, again, you're going through this major shift in what might have been normal for you before,
right.
And now it's no longer the case.
Yeah, because if you're having a lot of changes, if you're having issues with your libido, your sex drive, all of those things can kind of be problematic and then can lead to anxiety. Because mm-hmm. I imagine there's a bit of a cycle there as well, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're, I remember this from a conversation I had with someone in the psychology space, mm-hmm. that, you know, when men have stress and anxiety or depression from other issues, that also then influences the libido and sex drive as well. So if you have something that's already impacting that, and then yes. you add on the anxiety and the stress of, okay, well, I'm not performing the way I would want to, or I'm not, you know, as interested as I want to be, then you kind of have this vicious cycle going on.
Most definitely. So sometimes what I'll have the conversations with gentlemen when they first, and again, I'll tell you, men are not afraid to talk about this. So ladies, if anyone's listening, for your male family members right now, if you have a concern, please talk about it. Because women are a little bit more afraid. But men, I mean, 5 seconds in the chair and they're already like, doc, hey, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Which is good. I want people to feel open. Like to have say, these discussions.
It's in ways heavier on the mind of a man. From what we can see,
right.
It seems to weigh heavier on the minds of men when they come into the office as opposed to women.
Right. But if you think about from a psychological standpoint, I will ask men when they talk about erectile dysfunction, I'll say, are you having any random morning erections? Mm-hmm. Because that is driven by your sympathetic nervous system, that is driven by testosterone, that has nothing to do with your mind, mm-hmm. in terms of a psychological aspect.
Right.
So if, you know, I might have a patient who tells me, you know, it isn't the same with me and my wife, I'm having difficulty achieving or maintaining, mm-hmm. but you're still having random morning erections, and I'm actually more considering a psychological underpinning, because it's more like, again, the stress and anxiety of leading up to the event, mm-hmm. up to the performance, mm-hmm. that might be affecting them more so than an actual organic hormonal issue in the background.
Right, because you mentioned that even in terms of testing, it makes more sense to do it in the morning, or but not at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because that's not peak time.
Correct.
I did have a question on that, I realized, when you mentioned that. So mm-hmm. is that a space where, like, shouldn't the lab or whoever is doing the test know that we just don't do this? We don't take this? Like, if someone comes in and it's 4 o'clock, hey, just come back in the morning.
It should ideally be, in a perfect world, yes. Mm-hmm. The problem is, depending on the staffing, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on the discussion that the patient has with the physician, depending on what the patient sees as the urgency of doing the test, mm-hmm. that if that discussion doesn't first happen with the physician and the patient, mm-hmm. and it's not clear, to be truthful with you, and again, this is why we have, you know, different physicians and you know, healthcare providers in different spaces, different levels of training, that they may not even remember that, hey, this needs to be a particular time of day. This needs to be a fasting test. You see what I mean?
Right.
So if the discussion is not even had between the physician and the patient's not going
to
know.
Right. So they just go when they have the time to go on, like, based on the urgency and things like that.
And then if it's, let's say if it's just a billing staff member, not someone who's actually working in the lab and understands the biochemistry behind it, they also may not have any indication other than, hey, I was told to draw this lab.
Right. Because then somebody who's just on the administration side of it is, you're coming in for the lab, you're processing, you get the payments, so you send you in the back.
Exactly.
There's not necessarily the same level of, there might not be the same level of understanding.
For sure.
Which I guess, you know, you hear people talk about, like, I've worked on the administrative side, but in the medical space, and you hear people talk about things like cross-training and stuff like that, and now you kind of understand why there's value to that.
Yes.
Because you then have the opportunity, you know, because you're talking about the potential outflow of it, which is you have someone come in, they do that at a time when it's naturally going to be a lower number.
Right.
And then you have this potential sequelae of decisions that are made
based
on, well, it looks like low T, but then it's like you said, what time is the test taken and all those things, how that plays together.
It leads to so many things in terms of unnecessary costs.
Mm-hmm.
Importantly, unnecessary distress to the patient, having to be stuck multiple times. And also, it can sometimes lead to not fully appreciating, or the patient starting to wonder, like, doc, why are you telling me that this isn't low when this clearly says low on the lab?
Right.
You see what I mean? Because then the patient could get irate and say, well, why?
But then you could also end up with mistrust of the process, right?
Correct.
That'd be you as the physician, the lab, and that's definitely something in this day and age when we are seeing so much more health issues. The last thing you want to do is to add to a culture of distrust or mistrust of physicians or the healthcare space.
Correct.
Because then you end up leaving people people end up leaving themselves out in the cold. You know,
because they decided that they're fed up with it. Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot of potential challenges that come out of that sort of process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we talked about this a little bit. And I'm maybe going to ask this question in a different way. You know, how do factors like stress, diet, exposure to environmental toxins, things like that, how does that influence men's hormonal health?
So I would say there is some data in regards to certain plastics that might have estrogen behaving properties.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So again, both men and women have testosterone and estrogen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about the balance. So there is some limited data to say if we have to be careful of certain plastic exposures that might increase a man's estrogen level as compared to the testosterone levels.
This is like plastics, like your soda bottle, your water bottles. I'm just asking.
I'll have to look up the name again because I looked it up briefly last night. Here, let me see if I could find it. But that could be one aspect of it in terms of things from a lifestyle standpoint.
See, now you're going to cause me to ask another question. I hate to sound like a teenage boy.
No, go ahead.
And it's just because this is where it's rooted in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I remember being in high school and during, like, lunchtime, the boys would never want to buy, like, a Junkanoo Punch or a Gombe Punch because there's always this conversation around Yellow 5, right? So it's like if they were buying a soda, it would be, like, Coke or Sprite. It would never be anything that was yellow or orange in color because there's this whole concept around that.
Right.
But is there any truth to this idea of like additives and food colorings and things like that having a legitimate impact on hormones? Because I think the conversation was always like, oh, you know, that's going to cost us that in a third. Again, this is teenage boys. But, you know, it is sometimes people, if it's incorrect, a lot of people go through life and they never have it corrected.
Sure,
right?
sure.
It is still a legitimate question because sometimes there is a gap of information.
Understood.
So as silly as it may sound on the surface of the question.
Sure. No, I gotcha. I mean, information is power for you to be able to say, okay, is this legitimately something that you need to be worried about?
Right.
I will say for yellow number 5, I will have to look that one up directly.
And like I said, that may not be, it's what people would say.
Yeah. So let's see. So the plastic BPA, bisphenol A, that exists in certain, I think they're trying to reduce it in the majority of things that are being made.
Because you see all kind of bottles now that say
BPA free. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they will activate estrogen receptors like estrogen.
Mm.
So if there's been a lot of exposure, that could be one thing. Mm.
It's why people encourage things like these Stanley bottles and stuff like that.
Exactly. To put your water and stuff exactly. Like, rather than
just any random plastic bottle.
To be truthful with you, I'm sure at some point they're going to tell us something's wrong with a Stanley too, right? You know, everything.
It's all marketing, right? Oh, I say that as someone
Stanley,
in marketing,
it is. It's definitely marketing.
You want to talk about the video of the exploding car where the Stanley was still intact inside?
Oh, really?
Oh, no. They got, and apparently it was a true story.
Uh-huh.
This lady. She was in her car, it caught on fire. She dashed out of the car quickly because she obviously didn't want to get
burned. Right, she wanted to get burned, yes.
And the car exploded, and when they started to go through it, her Stanley was still intact.
Wow.
And Stanley heard the story, and then I think she became an ambassador for the company. Like they gave her this, that, and I think they purchased a new car for her. There's all these things. So again, everything kind of
it worked
back
out.
Marketing, but it's that sort of thing. Like it's all marketing when it comes to stuff like that.
So looking up yellow number 5 very quickly. Mm-hmm. Another, like the biochemical name is tartrazine.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, and this is a very, very rapid search. So please do not hold this to me. Let me see if I can find a more robust study.
Mm-hmm.
It's suggesting that in rat studies that it did actually lead to some issues in regards to sperm maturation, but not necessarily testosterone levels itself.
Right.
So there might have actually been. And what I could do is I could circle back with you. See, let me do some more in-depth research.
Might have been onto something. That's hilarious.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back. Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
All right, so, you know, similarly to women, how often should men be monitoring their hormonal health, and are there any different tests that are recommended for them versus women? And I guess that could be whether it's testosterone, thyroid, anything in that hormonal space.
Sure. So I would say it again goes back to if there's a clinical suspicion, that would be the instance where we're going to start. If someone's on testosterone hormone replacement therapy, mm-hmm. we will actually monitor testosterone levels. Mm. We'll monitor their blood levels to make sure that the blood isn't getting too thick to right. a point where it's not going to be safe and that we have to pull back. We monitor their prostate number mm-hmm. In that we want to know where does it start and has it increased as they're on testosterone replacement therapy, because if there is a significant jump in the number, because, you know, PSA is now being used to the point that thankfully men can avoid as many digital rectal exams used to have been deemed necessary mm-hmm. for screening. But if it suddenly changes while you're on the testosterone, then we have to ask ourselves, okay, was there a low-lying cancer sitting in the prostate we didn't know about that we've suddenly caused to grow because of the testosterone? Mm-hmm. Or did we just make the gland enlarged? Mm-hmm. So those are all the things that we have to monitor when someone's on the hormone replacement therapy.
Right, gotcha.
Again, because of, at least for erectile dysfunction, as one of the predominant symptoms that patients will come about with, then I might say, okay, we'll check your sugar, right? Mm-hmm. Ensuring that we're not having any unrecognized diabetes. We would check for, you know, what could be the risk of saying, are they at high risk for sleep apnea and things of that nature. But testosterone deficiency is different from typical age menopause in that there is actually, we have to do the testing for men. Mm-hmm. Because we don't anticipate it that although we know there's a gradual decrease as men age,
right, it's not the same drop off.
Exactly. And it's not that every man as they age will go into low testosterone. Mm-hmm. So we need to do that testing to be fair to gentlemen to make sure that they are appropriately diagnosed.
Right. Seems like
and appropriately managed.
There's a lot more theory with men than there is with women.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Definitely.
All right. I know we asked this question for women. I'll ask it again on the men's side just in case there's anything different here. Mm-hmm. But any myths or misconceptions as it pertains to men's hormonal health that you want to debunk?
Not every instance of erectile dysfunction is because of low T.
Okay.
So that would be the biggest one I want to put out there. Mm-hmm. In that if I have a patient who rightfully so is concerned about that, but is also not concerned that their sugar is 300 or their blood pressure is 170/90,
right.
then I have to have a frank conversation with them to say, hey, we have to put all of this into perspective.
Right.
I'm not, you know, discrediting that you're going through a major, you know, crisis, truthfully, with mm-hmm. erectile dysfunction, but we have to look at all the pieces.
Right.
And that, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of data for natural options in terms of supplements. Like you'll see all these like testosterone boosters and different things that mm-hmm. men will like take pictures. I'm like, if you want me to look at it, I need to look at the ingredients, send me the back, like the label right. so I can see what it is. There's not enough data. The same as we talked about black cohosh for women, right. not enough data. So sometimes patients will get frustrated with that because they'll tell me, doc, I want a natural option. And I can't necessarily support it yet. Am I completely opposed to it? No, because I mean, a lot of the medications that we use as endocrinologists and in general, you know, we're found in the bark of trees and in the right. spit of lizards and all of these things. I'm open to the possibility, but we have to have proof that it's actually going to do what we're hoping for it to do and not hurt you.
Right.
But I do not recommend, you know, a lot. Rephrase, I don't recommend any of the over-the-counter testosterone boosters that you can easily get as a supplement because there's no data to support them.
Right. And I think the point there is it's important to know the full picture.
Yes.
And not just be like, oh, I'm having this and then run to go get some supplement without actually, you know, talking to your physician. And I think it's, you know, we talk about so much and so often the importance of having like a primary care physician because at least, you know, they may not find themselves to you until they're deep in some other process, right? Or they may never have to find themselves to you because someone has a primary physician that, you know, they're keeping ahead of a lot of this stuff with.
Sure.
But it does speak to that importance because then you have a go-to if you have some initial question or concern. And if it's already at a point where you need to be referred, then at least you have a starting point to get that referral.
Exactly. Most definitely.
So last question, what advice would you give to any man who may suspect that they have a hormonal imbalance?
Similar to what I said for the ladies, don't be afraid to reach out for help and try to keep in your mind what the symptoms have been, how did they start, how long have they been going on for, and don't just suffer in silence. Just reach out to get that help. And I think you put an excellent point that if they have a good relationship with their primary doctor and they want to start there, that's an excellent place to start. Mm-hmm. Because I know sometimes it can be hard for some men and women more so, but to have that conversation with someone they meet for the first time, mm-hmm. If this is the very first time they're ever meeting me, to then have that conversation, mm-hmm. try to make it a safe space. But these are hard conversations to have. So if they have someone they already feel comfortable with, is, don't just put it to the wayside and accept it as the status quo. No, these are important aspects of your health that should also be looked into.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the biggest thing, is I would say, advocate for yourself and mm-hmm. don't be afraid to have those harder discussions.
Right. Fair enough. Thank you again for your time. Greatly appreciate this. Another awesome conversation that I think will be very helpful for our listeners.
Of course, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. So that wraps up today's conversation on Vital Voices. A heartfelt thanks again to Dr. Carmen Cartwright for offering invaluable insight into men's hormonal health.
We'd also like to give a special thank you to today's sponsors, Oak Tree Medical Center and Valor Security.
If today's discussion resonated with you or someone you know, remember to share this episode. Whether that's your father, your spouse, your brother, your uncle. And remember that education is the first step to better health. Don't forget to subscribe to Vital Voices on YouTube so you never miss a new episode. And until next time, I'm Alexis Burrows, encouraging you to stay informed and stay healthy.